look at two passages, 1 Corinthians chapter 5, 1 Corinthians chapter 5, and then Exodus chapter 12. 1 Corinthians chapter 5, 1 Corinthians 5, and then Exodus chapter 12. Little things can cause major problems. In the early to mid-1950s, an airline company began to make the first state-of-the-art air passenger, airliners for passengers. They came up with the idea of pressurizing the cabins, allowing the aircraft to fly higher and faster than any other jets in the world. And they created, they thought, the perfect jet airliner, at least so they thought. But in 1954, two of their airliners literally disintegrated in midair, killing 56 people. The designers of the jet overlooked one very little detail, which caused the jets to disintegrate. They didn't know at the time that square windows caused numerous weak points all throughout the airplane, and they caused the plane to blow up in midair. Today, that's why when you go on a plane, you will not see square windows. If you do, I would get off, all right, of the plane. It's somewhere in the middle of your flight. Well, it just depends if you want to, you know, maybe if you have set up a good insurance policy for the church, feel free to go ahead and go. But just a little tiny difference, all right, changed, was disastrous to those people. A few years ago, I remember seeing this as far as pictures. It's a famous destruction video that's out there. The Hyatt Regency decided to build a state-of-the-art hotel in Kansas City. They designed a double-deck walkway, which was to be suspended from the ceiling. The original plans called for one single steel pole to hold the structure together. But someone, somewhere, decided, that doesn't look as good, so we're going to take two poles and have one pole for each level instead of the one long pole, which those of you, I know John Hall's out on guard and he's already spouting. All right, he knows the engineering there. But it messed it up. It weakened it. That little change caused the structure to collapse, and 114 people died, and 216 others were injured. And it cost the Hyatt Regency $140 million in lawsuits, all right, because they put up a structure that was faulty. Little things do matter. And tonight we're going to look at, the Bible calls it a little leaven. And 1 Corinthians chapter 5, 1 Corinthians chapter 5, it says, "Your glorying is not good. Know ye not that a little leaven leaveneth the whole lump? Purge out therefore the old leaven, that ye may be a new lump, as ye are unleavened, for even Christ our Passover is sacrificed for us. Therefore let us keep the feast, not with old leaven, neither with the leaven of malice and wickedness, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth." Now some, you may sitting here and say, well, all right, I'm pretty sure that I am good on that. I don't have any leaven. All right, well, it's a typology thing here. You know, most of us aren't going into the store, or most of us aren't looking at leaven and unleavened, all right? The idea that Paul was talking to the church is that there is sin, and a little sin can spread to the whole lump. Leaven, we would consider yeast today, and leaven means to cause something to ferment or to turn sour. Oftentimes in the Bible, it speaks of corruptness, perverseness of life, and perverseness of doctrine or heart. The common agency today is yeast. Yeast is used to alter dough. It is used in many beverages in order to bring them to an alcoholic state. It literally changes the state of something from good to bad. All right, those that know about alcoholic beverages as far as the making of it, all right, hopefully you don't know too much about that, but in the making of alcoholic beverages, what are they doing? They're putting something in it, and it actually is rotting. All right, that's why when it comes to communion, there's a great debate over whether you use wine or you use fruit of the vine. Well, biblically, we believe that Jesus was pure. The Bible says that he was a representation of that lamb that was sacrificed. In fact, John the Baptist, when Jesus was coming, said, "Behold, the Lamb of God, which taketh away the sin of the world." So Jesus Christ was pure, he was sinless. So to have something that was rotten, or to partake of something that is rotted and decayed, and that represents Jesus' blood, is completely wrong. That doesn't represent Jesus properly, because Jesus is pure and holy and sinless. And so here we look at this little bit of leaven. Can a little bit of leaven in my life ruin it? Yes, it can. We want to look at this idea of leaven, a little leaven in our lives. Let's go to Exodus chapter 12 now. And in Exodus chapter 12, we have basically the description of the first Passover. In Exodus chapter 12, we're going to start in verse 17. Because the Passover was one day, and then you'll see in verse 17, God instituted another feast that went after the Passover. It says, "And ye shall observe the feast of unleavened bread. For in this selfsame day have I brought your armies out of the land of Egypt. Therefore shall you observe this day in your generations by an ordinance forever." Then it continues on, 7 days. Oh, wait, verse 18. "In the first month, on the 14th day of the month at even, ye shall eat unleavened bread until the 1 and 20th day of the month at even. 7 days shall there be no leaven found in your houses. For whosoever eateth that which is leaven, even that soul shall be cut off from the congregation of Israel, whether he be a stranger or born in the land. Ye shall eat nothing leavened, in all your habitations shall ye eat unleavened bread." Here the Bible tells us in verse 19, no leaven was supposed to be found in the house. To meet the letter of this law in the fullest manner possible, the Jews, on the eve of this festival, would institute a rigorous search through every part of their house. They not only removed all leavened bread, but they swept every part of the house clean. No crumb of bread would be left, and they would follow. In fact, the tradition, going back, the rabbis that passed it down, they would say that a lady would take a candle, she would light it and set it down where she started the search for leaven in the house. Then they would proceed all the way through the house until they got back to the candle. When they got back to that candle, they would know that every inch of the house was searched and every bit of leaven would be removed out of the house, the whole house. All right, if they saw any little bit, it was to be removed. Look at in Exodus 12 again. Look at verse 15. 7 days shall ye eat unleavened bread. Look what it says. The first day ye shall put away leaven out of your houses. Verse 16. It says halfway through, no matter of what work shall be done, this shall be a holy convocation to you. No matter what work shall be done, save that which every man must eat, that only may be done of you. Ye shall observe the feast, going on to verse 17. And then verse 19, it says, there shall be no leaven found in your house. Over and over, verse 20, ye shall eat nothing leavened, and all your habitation ye shall eat unleavened bread. Over and over, what is Moses, as he is portraying this to the children of Israel, what is he telling them? He's saying, I'm pretty sure he doesn't want leaven in the house. He only wants unleavened bread. The Passover symbolized the freedom God wanted to give his people. That feast was followed by six more days that focused on the fact that God's kind of freedom required his people to remove things from their lives and things from their homes. That's what this was typifying as far as the typology for you and for me. What Jesus now, I think, as we look at the Feast of Unleavened Bread, and when we go to the New Testament and Paul says, hey, a little leaven leaveneth the whole lump. Leaven is a type of sin. Yeast was used by God to symbolize the power of sin. When Israel offered bread to God, it had to be, the burnt offering had to be with no yeast in it. When Jesus warned his disciples of becoming like the Pharisees in Luke chapter 12, he said, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees. And when the church in Corinth, that was the passage we read in 1 Corinthians 5, had a man in their congregation who was engaged in sexual immorality, Paul wrote that they were not to associate with that man until he repented. They were not even to eat with that man. And he said if they insisted on looking the other way, that man's sin would taint the rest of them. That's the context of 1 Corinthians 5 and 6. He's saying, I don't want him around. He shouldn't be around unless he repents. If he keeps at this, you don't even eat with him. And if you are going to do it, don't you understand that a little leaven leaveneth the whole lump? So all through Scripture, leaven is a type of sin. The typology of leaven then is sin. A normal loaf of bread has yeast or leaven. That's what it makes it rise. And the Jewish people around their Jewish holidays, they have the matzah. Right? That's what it's called. It's called the matzah. And the matzah is an unleavened cake. Theirs are pretty big. All right, I don't know, even when we partake of the unleavened bread, I don't usually think, oh man, I hope there's some leftover. All right, and you know why? Because normally that leaven, the removal of the leaven, it takes a lot of the flavor away. All right, but leaven here is a type of sin. So the first thing I want to look at is the typology of leaven and that it's sin. So the first thing we see in relation to leaven is that sin is harmful, even a little bit of it. We're looking at taking communion tonight. And so now we're looking at the bread that is there. And specifically, God commands us, when commanded the children of Israel, when they were going to partake of the Passover, that they had to go through their house and they had to remove all leaven, remove all sin. Now, in the same context, I believe when we come to the communion table, it is a time that we need to understand the power of sin. We need to understand that even a little bit of sin is harmful. When sin enters into an area of your life, it doesn't take much of it to change it. It doesn't take much to warp your character. You know, those of you that have baked bread and you put in a little yeast into that bread and then you walk away for a couple hours and you let that loaf rise. In the same way, that's what a little pinch of sin left in your life, that's what it's going to do. It's going to take over and warp your character. All of a sudden, it is blown up out of proportion. You say, I didn't think that little thing could do that. That is Satan's lie. Sin is harmful. Let me ask you this. How much sin is okay in your life? How much sin is okay? I mean, how much are you going to allow? How much are you gonna say, well, you know what, I've gotten a lot of it out. But God brings us to a place, and I believe that's what communion is about. Communion, the whole idea of communion is us having a relationship, communing with, and fellowshipping with our God, and we know that God doesn't allow sin in His presence. So the children of Israel were taught, just by a ritual in essence, they were taught that they needed to go through the house and they need to pull out that leaven, all of it, and get out and not have contact with it for 7 days. Not have contact with it for 7 days. First thing we see is that sin is harmful, even a little of it. The second thing we see about sin, we're thinking about yeast kind of. When you put a little bit of yeast in a loaf of bread, just a little bit is all it's needed. The other thing that you see about sin in comparison to leaven, a little leaven, is sin gives a false assumption. Sin gives a false assumption. Some people think the larger loaf is going to contain a lot more flour. Those of you that have cooked again, you know you bite into that big roll and there's an air pocket. What is it? It's a false assumption, isn't it? One man said that he worked for his dad in a donut shop. And he was rebuked by his father because his donuts were larger than his dad's. And the dad accused his son of using more dough. And so the dad was saying, hey, you're costing me more money by baking those bigger donuts. Well, the son replied that he hadn't used any more dough than normal, but had instead let the donuts rise longer than his dad's. So it was the same amount of flour, but what was that donut doing? Sitting there, flaky, or maybe not flaky, maybe it's like that Krispy Kreme, and they let it rise really big, and then all of a sudden, that's why that donut disappears so fast. See? That's why it disappears so fast. It's just that it's so small. All right? It's so small. All right? So have a dozen. All right? Have a dozen of them. All right? Because it's actually probably just about that much. All right? But what is it with those donuts? Well, they're giving a false assumption. And so sin gives a false assumption. Sin makes us believe we have more in our lives than we do. Sin, like bitterness and hatred, can make us feel that we have more power over others. Sins like hypocrisy and bigotry can make us feel more important than we actually are. Sinning by viewing crude movies or sexually explicit materials can make us believe we are more mature and more grown up. Sins of getting drunk or getting high can fool us into thinking we've gained more control over our lives. Just because something says it's something. All right, this is deep thought. Just because something says it's something doesn't mean it's so. All right, some of you in here can think or say all you want, I'm skinny. Say it all you want. And you can jump up and down, and hopefully you don't, all right? Because most of us will be kind of rattling, especially if a few of you do it at the same time. And you say, I'm skinny. Just because you say something doesn't mean it is. So, and that's what sin does. Sin gives us this false assumption. Sin can make us believe that we've gained more of something in our lives. But in reality, all we've done is gotten a false impression. For instance, let me use another silly illustration. What if I said, there is no gravity? There is no gravity. I write books about it. I write articles. They get published. I do a documentary like some stupid famous almost presidents and ex-presidents that do documentary, false ones that say, this is truth. And I do all of that with gravity. And then I walk up there And I say, see? Ah! Now you know what's going to happen. You're going to pry me off there. If I go up to a high building, you're going to have squeegees down there and little things, the spatulas to get me up and flip me. All right, and you're going to be like, you know what? You know, I don't understand it. Just because I say there's no gravity doesn't mean there is. And just because the devil says that, man, with sin, you're going to have all this, don't believe the lie. Sin gives a false assumption, but then sin like leaven or yeast. Sin like leaven, all right, we're thinking of it in comparison to yeast. Okay, what does yeast do? Yeast comes in and just a little bit. Sin, all it takes is a little bit to ruin your life. Just like yeast when it comes in, then while it's there and it's festering inside, it gives you an assumption that you're going to get a lot more than what you're really going to get. But yeast in its work is actually decaying. Leave a loaf of bread out. Leave a loaf of bread out. Okay, leave, especially with the humidity and all that. That's my challenge to you, little kids. You know, leave it out for a week or two, and then make Dad lunch. You know, and make him lunch. You know, kind of, don't let him know. Just kind of slide it into his lunch pail as he goes off to work. And Dad will be so happy. He'll be surprised. All right, why will he be surprised? Because that yeast causes decay. Leave a loaf of bread out for too long. What happens to it? It gets moldy. And crackers, all right, unleavened bread, basically lasts forever. All right, it lasts a long time. It doesn't decay and rot. Why? Because it doesn't have that leaven in it. In the same way, sin has the power to cause our lives, cause our homes to decay and rot away. So when we come to a communion table and we're partaking of that bread, it should remind us that I shouldn't allow any sin into my life. We purposely have unleavened bread. Why? Because it's a picture of our Savior who was perfect and sinless, and we want to be like Him, so I don't want leaven in my life. I need to get it out. So what are some lessons then from leaven? What are some lessons? All right, those are some easy things that we can understand. So what are some lessons then that we get from leaven? One is, have times to inspect your life for sin. Have times to inspect your life for sin. Now the Jewish people, they kind of had a white glove one time a year, didn't they? They had a white glove. They were supposed to, all right, for starting at the Passover, they had to remove all leaven, and they had to go around all their house, and they removed it out of there, and it was not supposed to be in their house for basically 7 days, including the Passover and the Feast of Unleavened Bread. It wasn't supposed to be near their house. Now, what is that a picture for you and I? They had a time that they went searching their heart, searching their life, searching through things and saying, God, where's the leaven? Let's get it out of here. Let's clean this place up. There should be times when we inspect our life for sin. The family spends, in the Jewish society, the family spent an entire week scouring the house for any and every small crumb of yeast. And they did that because in Exodus 12:19, for 7 days, no leaven is to be found in your house. They weren't just getting rid of the yeast that happened to be laying on the floor. And that's what sometimes we do in our lives. Oh, that's an obvious sin. Yeah, let's get rid of that. No, we go into every nook and cranny of our heart. And we scrape it out and we say, God, you know what? I think there's something growing back in there. Get the searchlight out. Search me, oh God. And we go in there and we let God scrape it out. And this is my challenge to you. You open up your heart. You get on your knees. You open up the Bible and you say, God, search me, and watch out. Because he will do it. You won't imagine, you can't imagine all the stuff that's in there. But God can find it. And he'll help you find it. And afterwards, there's just a clean feeling. There's a cleansing. We should have times to inspect our life for sin. Secondly, another lesson from the leaven is we shouldn't underestimate the impact of a little leaven in our life. Don't underestimate the impact of a little bit of leaven. There are folks that we're sitting here, and I know people that I've grown up with, and they thought, oh, just a little bit of leaven. I was studying this week on a message, so you'll hear it in a few weeks again. But I was studying this week in the area of purity and biblical purity. And there was a study done last year in 2013, not in the world, but in Christian circles, of men 18 years old and older. And this is what the study found. 50% of men have a problem with pornography. Not the world. This is Christians. And you and I both know that's only the ones that were honest. That's only the ones that were honest. Now, what is it? They thought, well, you know what? It's just a little leaven. This is something that nobody else knows about. No, we need to ask God to let us not underestimate the power of Satan, just letting him have a little corner of our life. Do you think that Satan is happy with just a little bit? No, he's never happy with just a little bit. He always wants more. In fact, the Bible tells you that your flesh is the same way. What does it say? The eyes of man are never satisfied. And so that's why in the area of sexual purity, that's why the devil has made so many people bozos. He's made them bozos because he's promising them that this thing will satisfy their lust. No, it won't. It will not satisfy it. We need to go into our house. We need to go into our heart. And we need to clean out and not underestimate the power that the devil can have when we allow one little sin to stay in there and grow. We should be pulling it out. Don't underestimate the impact of sin in our life. So what lessons do we learn? We should have times to inspect our life for sin. We don't underestimate the impact of sin in our life. Then we don't get enamored by the false claims of sin. We don't get enamored by the false claims, or we don't get caught up in the teaching of the world in the area of sin that, you know what, it's good. Everybody has something. I mean, nobody's perfect. Don't get caught up in the world's teaching. We say that we live separated from the world, but yet in so many areas, we adapt their philosophy. We take their philosophy. There's a thought pattern that can undermine every effort you make to keep the world from influencing your family. One man wrote about this, and he said that, and I think this was a few years ago, there was a TV commercial put out by concerned TV executives. So you think, oh, that's good. And they said they know how concerned you are with the influence of certain kinds of TV program. So they put a commercial out to remind you to pay attention to the ratings when a show comes up. And the ratings will be up there, and it might have a Y there. It might have a PG. And then it might have an MA on it. And these concerned executives in their public service, what were they telling you? What are they telling us? They're telling us that, you know what, hey, for the children, you know what, that's not good for them, but this MA is for mature people. How silly. So what are we telling our kids? Hey, leave it, because when you become an adult, you can be a pig. Is that what we're saying? That's what the world says, and that's what some of us have adopted into our philosophy. And you wonder why your children don't follow your words. They follow your actions. And by your actions, what are you telling them? Hey, once you get a certain age, you have a certain level of sin that you can participate in. That's what the world is teaching today. How silly. You're saying that as a man, as I grow up and I become a mature man, my lust all of a sudden doesn't affect me. I've conquered it. Well, any man in here knows that that's not true. And we have to deal with that over and over. And so we need to learn to not get enamored by the world and say, oh, you know what? Yeah, this is the way it should be. No, we're going to take the scriptures. And I'm not gonna look at the world to get my advice. Children, one person have put it this way, children have never been very good at listening to their elders, but they have never failed to imitate them. All it takes is a simple opening of the door for sin to enter into your home, enter into your heart, and it will affect the lives of everyone around you. That's what God is teaching. Don't get enamored by the world and by the glitz. I even say that in the Christian circles. All right, there's one college that is basically in fundamental circles. It's the party school now. So I call them the Disney Baptist College. You know why? Because all they do is bounce around in their little Mickey Mouse outfit saying, it's a small world after. All right, and they run around. Oh, it's so beautiful. You know what? No, it's not. It's a fight out there. It's a battle. And sin is real. I'm not in Disneyland. And sin, that's what the devil wants you to do. He wants to place it out there as like this little cute thing. Oh, isn't that cute? No, it's not. It'll destroy your life. And that's what sin will do. Sin. We can't be enamored by it. And then the last thing here with leaven, as far as a lesson, don't let sin linger in your heart or home. How do we create a heart? How do we create a home where we will be safe from the destructive influences? Well, the Bible tells us that we should put a watch. We should set a guard. The Bible tells young people, this was in Proverbs 4 and verse 23, Solomon looking out, and he told them to guard their heart, to keep their heart with all diligence. And the idea was to build walls. And so in our case, what are we supposed to do? We should not let sin linger when it comes in. We face it. We face that sin. We deal with that sin. We look at it and we say, God, what should I do? And we take it out of our lives. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it hurts our pride. Oh, you leave it there and you won't have any pride. We don't worry about what will people say. What will people think? They're a sinner just like you. And hopefully, a good Christian will say, man, they're getting right with God. They're taking care of that sin. We don't let sin linger in our hearts. There's a story of a girl who was approaching her mother while the mother was preparing a salad. And casually, she asked permission to go to an amusement center that had a very bad reputation. Her mom said no, and the daughter said, well, all the girls are going to be there. The mom was silent for a couple of minutes, and she was making that salad, and then she reached into the sink and pulled out some of the lettuce that had dropped down by the drain and inside it and started pulling it out. And she just dropped it right on top of the salad. And the girl's like, Mom! The girl was astonished. The mother said, why, I just thought if you didn't mind putting garbage into your heart and mind, you wouldn't mind a little garbage in your salad. Some of us care more about the cleanliness of our food and eating utensils. We care more about the cleanliness of our physical body. You've scoured your face. You've scoured your flesh. You've scrubbed it down. You wouldn't walk outside looking with a big stain on you. How silly! But spiritually, you walk around with a huge stain. Spiritually, you have come in and you have mixed all kinds of junk into your spiritual food. And it doesn't seem to bother you at all. What we have to do is understand what leaven is. It is that representation of sin. And as we come to the communion table, we say, God, turn a spotlight on. Look at my heart. Look at my home. And we should have a time. And it should be often that we ask God to turn the spotlight on and let him pull out things and pull out things and pull out things and clean me up, God. And what you'll see is that you will experience God's blessing. You'll experience his presence like you've never experienced before. Heads bowed, eyes closed. We're going to have a time of invitation. And I would ask you, how's God dealing with your heart? What is your opinion of sin? Is it flippant? Or here's the Israelites, it was just yeast. It was a picture, I know, but it was just yeast. And God said, get it out of your house. Clean it. Never should be in it for this part of the feast. Are you just allowing your life to fill up with that sin? Let's remove it. Heavenly Father,